The risk of complications is a concern with any surgical procedure. And Terry's family was worried about her choice to have surgery.
At first, they were reluctant because it was a surgery. But then I explained to them that I want to be around for you guys. I want to be able to be around for my grandchildren. And at the point that I'm at now, I might not be there.
Terry obviously decided that for her, the benefits outweigh the risks. But what should clinicians tell patients to make sure they're making the most informed decision?
It's very important that the surgeon and the patient have a long and deep discussion about the problems that can occur with any of the procedures that they choose. And just to review a few of the most common ones, for the gastric bypass Roux-en-Y, probably the most significant one is a leak of some kind, which can end up with a patient in the ICU or having to be reoperated on. Ones that occur a little bit later are things like perhaps a blood clot can form in the legs or in the chest. You can have some narrowing of the connection between the small stomach pouch and the intestine. You can also develop ulcers called marginal ulcers between that connection where the small stomach pouch and the intestine come together. And almost everyone at some point in time, really about 85% of people, experience something called dumping. It occurs when people eat a high amount of starch in one sitting. So those are things that can happen really in the short term or intermediate term to a gastric bypass patient. Long term, things like weight regain and vitamins and mineral deficiencies can become very important, as can protein malnutrition or anemia. When you turn and look at the adjustable gastric band, you're talking about a different set of things. Again, you can have a perforation of the stomach when you pass the band behind the stomach, but it is actually fairly rare if you have a very experienced surgeon doing your procedure. Things that happen in the intermediate or late period are things like a prolapse of the band or a slippage of part of the stomach to make a larger pouch above the band.
You know, Robin, the conversation about complications with the patient should also include the worst complication, which is mortality. And I think the surgeon should discuss that in the context of the potential mortality benefit or reduced mortality with the operations, you know, based on some of this evidence that was presented earlier with the SOS study showing a reduced long-term mortality as a consequence of these operations. But nevertheless, these can be, you know, major operations with a potential risk. Now, gastric bypass has been associated with a mortality risk of about 0.3 up to maybe 1%, whereas gastric banding, about 0.1%. And just to give a comparison, gastric bypass has been compared to, for example, hip replacement in terms of the mortality risk. Gastric banding, probably associated with gallbladder surgery in terms of the mortality risk with these operations. You know, fortunately, we've seen over the last 5 to 8 years a steady decrease in operative mortalities for these operations, in part related to surgeon experience, but also related to this new interest in, you know, quality assurance.
Well, what is the appropriate follow-up, both short-term and long-term, for patients who have had bariatric surgery?
Our preference is that the patient follows up very frequently during the period of their biggest weight loss, and then once they get to a stable weight and stable behavior, which means regular exercise, taking their vitamins, all the things that really a complete program is going to recommend, that their follow-up is at least annual. And I know, Chris, that our preference would be that that partnership handles that follow-up together. What do you recommend for patients for follow-up?
We try to see patients every 3 to 6 months, and we look at things, are they getting enough protein? We try to have them eat 3 meals a day with limiting snacking. They need to take their vitamins and minerals, specifically with the combined and malabsorptive procedures. We try to get them on a regular exercise program. The other thing that we try to do is have them not drink and eat at the same time. Their food can go down quickly, and it defeats the purpose of the band if it's a purely restrictive procedure. But in the combined procedures like the gastric bypass, they can have problems with regurgitation. A lot of programs now that belong to a center of excellence, that I think is important because a lot of that is required, and they have adequate follow-up.
Chris, I'm glad you mentioned that because this notion of a center of excellence is somewhat of a new concept in bariatric surgery. And there are two organizations in the United States, the American College of Surgeons and the American Society for Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery, have instituted these center of excellence programs, which essentially are certifying centers that include hospitals and surgeons to perform procedures with a very high degree of quality outcomes. So I think physicians that are interested in referring patients to a bariatric surgeon should really think about sending their patients, you know, to these Center of Excellence certified centers because they're more likely to have better outcomes.
We've covered a great deal of information about the link between obesity and diabetes, but what do you think are the main take-home points for physicians who are watching this program?
I think obesity and diabetes have reached epidemic proportion in this country. Diabetes is a debilitating disease that causes multiple deaths, blindness, and amputations. And despite significant advancements, we still have a long way to go in the treatment of obesity and diabetes. The second thing is I think diet, exercise, and behavior modification has to be the mainstay, whether it's medical treatment, surgical, or pharmacotherapy, that there's no real standalone modality without diet, exercise, and behavior modification. And thirdly, and most importantly, I think we need to calculate one's body mass index. It will stratify patients for treatment and guide in treatment care that we can hopefully improve their outcomes.
You know, it's very clear from our discussion that obesity is a chronic and progressive disease with a very high association with diabetes. But I think it's important to realize that patients who have surgical procedures achieve complete remission in about 75% of cases, and that many more patients with diabetes are much improved even if they don't achieve complete remission. And in the end, it turns out that the risk of surgery is really probably smaller than the risk of the disease itself. And so I think that people need to realize that there's procedures that are less risky, and there's very good evidence that's been demonstrated about survival of patients who have had surgery, and it's vastly improved.
And I think physicians should recognize that diabetes is a very severe, chronic, disabling condition. Physicians should adhere to guidelines by the American Diabetes Association and target their therapy to a hemoglobin A1C less than 7 and normal blood pressure and normal cholesterol and use a variety of these tools we have discussed, including surgery. And for many patients who have the combination of obesity and diabetes who have failed the conventional approaches, that physicians should start thinking of surgery as a specific therapy for diabetes because, as Robin pointed out, remission rates can be very high. If we can get our patients in remission, then we will probably be able to reduce the incidence of these very debilitating complications and early mortality.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today in this important discussion about weight loss and obesity-related diabetes. And I'd like to thank you, our viewers, and I hope the discussion today will be helpful in advising your patients and making the best treatment option decisions. Also, I encourage each of you to go to your computer, log on to discoveryhealthcme.com, and take the post test. It only takes a few minutes to earn free credit for this program. And if you'd like to see the program again, you can watch it online, download a podcast, or order a DVD. The graphics and references from the program are also available online. Finally, I'd like to thank the University of Virginia for accrediting this program, as well as Ethicon Endosurgery for providing the educational grant to make this program possible. Until next time, I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Health CME.